That's a word that you can't say on the radio.
On lug radio.
So in this segment,
what word was that? I have to note down the times to bleep this out.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker.
Thank you for that.
Welcome to Lug Radio.
Yep.
Season 4, episode 10.
It's a particularly blue intro, isn't it, really?
It is.
Swearing.
Blue.
We've been pretty rude.
This show may contain swearing.
This show may, we all say that, actually. We haven't said it for ages.
It has contained swearing already.
Because it always contains swearing.
How about all our shows this year might contain swearing? Does that cover it?
I don't think, to be honest with you, that we can reasonably assume people have listened to this show.
Any so New Year's resolutions? On the show today, we've got Miguel the Igazda.
Miguel!
Yep. We've actually agreed to come back on the show after the shoeing.
Miguel's a dude, though.
He is a dude.
He is
definitely
a dude, and it's great
Props
to have him back on the show. Yeah, it is. Well done, Miguel. Thank you for that. We've got Stefan from Nouveau.
Stefan Mushroom.
We have your emails.
Stefan Mushroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, emails. And we're going to talk about...
We're going to talk about the opposite of forking.
Yes.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about games. And
about what?
And how they're not all just gnome stones.
Yeah.
You know. And they're not all Half-Life 2 either.
Yeah. And we're going to have an interesting debate there. And we've got a fantastic joke at the end of the show.
We have got a fantastic joke. Stay tuned for a good joke and a little story from Jono.
Yeah.
Not about a film.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
Bye. So we, this is a very boring intro. We should do something interesting.
Okay. Right. Drums?
No drums. No. Would you like me to play
Bag pipes?
What?
Bag fucking pipes.
Bag fucking pipes?
Yeah.
I can stick some.
Was he Bag Pussy's brother?
He was like the mad one. I'm Bag fucking pipes. I'm going to get you, Professor Snuggle.
That would be Yaffle.
Whatever.
Are you correcting him on a pronunciation of a character in a children's program?
I am, yes.
You can even be holier than thou about children's programs, can't you?
Yes. He's a fucking pedant. He's become his, like, New Year's resolution is...
To be a pederast.
Is to correct everybody.
Not a pederast.
Pedant. Did you have any New Year's resolutions?
I spend more time with my friends. Do you know what mine was?
Fuck off.
That's my New Year's resolution. I think I neglected my friends a little bit last year with work. I was too busy.
Because you're too busy being a fantastic open source celebrity.
Well, it's difficult.
Remind me what's happening tomorrow. Oh, yeah. You're flying off to Australia. Yes.
To be with my friends.
Got lots of friends there.
Yeah. Harold Bishop.
Isn't he dead?
No, he's on the
side. Oh, God, no, he came back and he had amnesia, didn't he, or something?
Yep,
didn't he give your mum a biscuit?
What? Have I told that story on the show?
No, you haven't.
Tell it on the show, though, because this is fucking wicked.
Apparently, I have no idea whether this is actually true or not. But,
I've read that it is true.
Some guy saw Harold Bishop, the guy who plays Harold Bishop, Ian Smith.
Bishop.
He's the lead...
Rhodesia. I assume it's a different Ian Smith.
He's a fucking nutter, though. He got fired from Neighbours twice. For like just fucking shit up. You're like arriving on the set pissed, he'd smash stuff up. The guy's like a real rebel.
Oh, in that case,
Harold Bishop.
God fearing Harold Bishop.
The story's more likely to be true then,
because
he was doing an interview or something somewhere.
Why don't you put them out of their misery?
And a guy in the audience said, "Why are you so fat?" Right? And Harold Bishop, without fucking missing a blink, looked at him and said, "Because every time I fuck your mum, she gives me a biscuit.
It is a quality
Which
resort.
Is utterly quick-witted. What? Very, very impressed with Harold Bishop.
What
that line.
A line. I mean, how much more respect can the
That's
guy
the
get?
50 megaton zinger of lines. I'm well impressed with that.
Was that live on TV or...
No.
You now know as much as I do about the story.
Okay, should we get on with the show?
Every time I fuck your mum, she gives me a biscuit.
Oh, are we? Okay.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
My resolution is to have more biscuits from your mother.
Obviously, your New Year's resolution is not to keep your head perfectly bald. You seem to be failing on all accounts.
Are you now selling out because people don't like the true baldness?
Not at all. It's just that I've been in Belgium all year so far, and I've just got back, and now I'm off to
and they don't
Ireland
have razors in Belgium.
No, exactly. They've discovered razor technology.
The
yet.
EU treaty on razor proliferation.
Excuse me for not packing my clippers when I go away.
Clippers. Is that some kind of metaphor?
Clipper. Yeah. You go to clipper.com and you get your Web20 clipper.
Well, thank you.
To be honest with you, you now look less like our bald hero, more like the bloke out of Eurasia. So I do something about that,
Andy Bell.
Would you?
You What's Bell? Your New Year's resolution?
You do look like
Aquarius.
One of the Pet Shop Boys.
Thank you.
You look like, he doesn't look like the Pet Shop Boys.
He actually look like...
He looks like the bloke out of Eurasia.
Fat Boy Slim is who he looks like.
No.
Ah,
no, anyway, he doesn't. I haven't got a New Year's resolution.
Really?
That's because you're perfect.
Because I never frigging live up to them, so I gave up this time.
I normally don't have them, but the mates thing got me thinking, so I decided on that. Matt.
Awesome.
I'll spend less time with John.
Thanks. I had two. One was to... three, actually.
One was to have a child.
No!
One was to spend more time with friends, yes.
Okay.
One was to actually start writing a fucking novel, because I've been talking about it for years.
Is this novel or Neville?
Neville. And the other was to be less nice to people, because you don't get you anywhere. So fuck
you. You do realise that your nickname is
Angry Ravel.
Angry Ravel turns into Angry Inch.
Well, no, I just realised that if you let people out while you're driving, it doesn't get you anywhere, does it?
No.
So stop it.
Fuck about Christian motion.
I think
motion.
My only one was learn gem. It's not really a New Year's resolution.
Learn gem?
Something that I'd like to do. Learn gem.
You don't have
any... Learn gem?
Jason's gem.
German.
Oh, German.
You don't have a choice. Old.
Yeah. I do have a choice.
Hello, bitter. I want some room service, bitter.
I think I'm going to be less tolerant of the elderly.
I don't think that's possible.
Fuck the elderly.
It?
They smell like the elderly.
I know what they need to do. They need to get out of your fucking way, don't they?
They need to get out of my way. Every lunchtime I go to Morrison's to buy a sandwich, right?
And because you're all hiking.
Because for sandwich, you mean pie, right?
And because it's during the day, and because it's midweek, it's like a theme park for the elderly, right? And the infirm. And I go there, and I was walking behind this old woman.
Presumably, instead of Nemesis, what they've got is reduced sausage rolls.
I was walking around thinking, getting quietly fucked off with the elderly. And I was walking behind this woman, and I was thinking, just get a fucking move on.
And there's the tolerance right there.
Accidentally tripped her up.
No!
It's because... it's like we fought in the war, so therefore we have no reason to be aware of people around us any longer.
Here's the thing, though.
Dropping fucking shopping bags left, right. What?
Did you trip her onto the floor?
I did not trip her. No, I just caught the back of her feet and...
And now her hips are flip-flop. Her hips now powder, of course.
I accidentally clotheslined her, you know.
Thing is, right, the war generation are tailing off. So soon, old Why people won't have, won't have won't have an excuse for being
I was thinking about this. Like, you'd speak to, like, I talked to my granddad, and he talks about how he, like, used to listen to Louis Armstrong and that kind of stuff, yeah. Right? When I'm a granddad, I'm going to say to my kids, I listened to Cannibal Corpse when I was younger. I can't see how it's going to get much worse. You know?
How about a New Year's resolution be more tolerant?
No, mine's the opposite of that.
What kind of hippie comes up with that idea?
I'm going to be fucking less tolerant.
Okay.
Also,
okay.
Too much tolerance.
New Year's resolution. Let's get on with the show.
Okay, we're talking to Stefan from the Nouveau Project, who founded the Nouveau Project, in fact. So, Stefan, tell us a bit about Nouveau and what it's doing.
Well, the purpose of Nouveau is to get an open-source driver working for 3D accelerations on NVIDIA cards. Along the way, we're actually interested in other things, like 2D acceleration, and in particular... EXA acceleration for organs, such things. But our main point of focus at the moment is 3D acceleration, because at the moment we have no free open source support for 3D.
Yeah, indeed. Now, I'm really interested to know this because I don't know a great deal about it. Where do you even begin? I mean, how do you start? I mean, take it there's no documentation for you.
Yeah, well, there's actually a number of things available on the web. First of all,
really? Okay.
You have to look at the existing open source driver, the NV driver from Xorg. I mean, even if it's not fully documented, and actually the code is obfuscated, but
yeah,
it works. I mean, it's code that we can clean up and turn into something which is clean and functional. So,
and is the code obfuscated, by the way?
Well, it's... Just, you know, instead of using register names
right.
or nice name for the card name numbers, you know.
Right,
they
okay.
use numbers everywhere, they just substitute. I think maybe you saw the CVS link on the X-Ray 86
right.
Website at some point. There was blogging around that. And they posted a link where NVIDIA actually asked for people to obfuscate the driver at one point, so.
Okay, right.
Yeah, maybe Googling a bit will turn it up.
Wow.
The project seems to have got a lot of attention recently, and it looks like a really great project that everyone's supporting. But have you had any interaction with NVIDIA about any of this? Has anyone kind of come forward and tried to be supportive or tried to tell you to stop or anything?
No, actually, there was no interaction with NVIDIA at all. NVIDIA know about us. I mean... We work for example, there are NVIDIA people sitting on the Xorb channels, you know, on IRC.
Really?
And they know about us, but they never either helped us or crashed us in any way, you know.
Right.
So I think we're pretty much ignoring each other for the moment. I'm not sure how it will turn up in the future, but for now, it's pretty much totally separate.
Right. So are you building on the NV code, or are you starting from scratch?
Yeah, we're building on the NV code. It was, you know, as I said, it was a working driver, and it didn't really make sense to start yet another new driver.
Fair enough.
From scratch. So we actually decided, because it was at the very beginning, and I decided to take the NV driver and clean it up as much as I could. Then I added the EXA patch, which was a new 2D acceleration architecture, and well, as we clean up the stuff, it's getting, you know, more and more in a very developer-friendly form.
Cool.
From the initial obfuscated thing it was before.
Excellent. A question here. I don't know very much about graphics, so you have to help me out a bit. There are two main reasons, I think, why people are looking for 3D graphics. The first one, accelerated 3D. The first one is to get things like compies and barrel working, you know, 3D effects on the desktop. And the second one is for games. Now, is it any easier to build enough of a 3D driver that it can do the compies stuff, but not do the games, or do you have to do it all in one go?
Well, there's not much difference between the two.
Okay.
If you can get games going, you usually get compies, and if you can get compies going, you get the games.
They pretty much call the same functions.
Both will require textures, both will require triangles, both, you know.
Right.
They both require the same functional ID, except for the very specific compies extensions, like texture from Pixnet. That's very specific, and that's a very, very small part of the driver. So most of the code base would actually serve both purposes, if that's what you're actually wondering, yeah?
How far do you estimate you are through the project? I mean, how much of it have you got done, and how much is there to do? Is there quite a bit to do?
Well, actually, we got GLX gears going, like...
You got GLX gears done, yeah?
No more work is left.
It's going really properly now, but... it's only on selected cards and such, so we're still quite at the beginning, but a lot of the work that happened in the past months has been a lot behind the scenes, you know. It's been supportive work in the kernel, just, it won't do anything proper, but it will just support the rest of the work that will be done in the driver, in the 3D driver itself. In particular, the kernel component requires that we set up a number of quite complex things, and we needed to reverse engineer that ourselves.
Cool, right.
And it was not an easy task at all.
I can imagine.
So, been wondering what we have been doing, but we have been investing a lot of time in that supporting work, yeah.
Yeah, sure. What brought you into the project? I mean, are you a Second Life player? I mean, you obviously have a need for 3D graphics.
I'm not sure I quite understand the question here.
Okay, so, I mean, why did you start this? I mean, do you play Second Life, or do you play 3D games? I mean, why did you feel the need to do this?
Well, it was quite a pragmatic need at first.
Of course it might be.
I used to have a Dual Atom MP machine at work.
Okay.
And the NVIDIA drivers would just crash on it, even for 2D.
Really?
So I was basically left out in the cold. I thought if I had the source code,
excellent.
I could fix it. And since I've been working on Radeon before, and I said, okay, what about I start a new project and try to support NVIDIA boards as well with open source?
Yeah.
Well, then I did it.
Good. Good. Cool. Stuff. No, that's a really good one.
Well done.
A question for you. Do you need Nuvo to get 3D acceleration on any NVIDIA card, or are there some which were supported before but not the newer ones?
Well, at the moment, for example, the GLX Gears only works on NV40 cards, which means GeForce 6000 and such, you know.
Right.
So, for now, it's mostly newer cards. But actually, I would like to support everything down to the TNT boards, so the quite older ones. Right. The reason for that is at the moment, NVIDIA has basically dropped support for older cards to a legacy driver, which is not updated as constantly and doesn't work as good as the other newer drivers. So maybe we could bring things like OMPs and such to those cards, which through the legacy drivers don't have access to it at the moment.
Okay.
In terms of the project, I mean, it sounds like we need more people to get involved and hack on it. What kind of people are you looking for? I mean, do people need to have a rocket science degree in programming, you know, GPU registers?
Do they have to use a real language, is what you're asking?
Well, there's no degree in rocket GPU programming, but...
I'm sure there is.
You know, most DRI developers actually, you know, learn things as they go. There's no real way to learn that from books or such, you know. We all learn on the field. So, well, basically, I think OpenGL knowledge is quite important because... in particular with the NVIDIA boards, it's very close to the real OpenGL API. So knowing OpenGL actually helps a lot. It also helps a lot when you write tests for reverse engineering functionality. You write tests in OpenGL, you know. So, OpenGL knowledge and C knowledge, obviously, is quite useful. Kernel programming or previous driver programming experience is not really highly needed.
Okay. One other question then. So once Nouveau's done, are you going to do ATI drivers next?
Well, actually, I've been doing ATI drivers before. For I was working on the Radeon cards.
Brilliant. Can you fix the 200M Express, please, so my laptop works?
But, no.
That was a no, wasn't it? I can tell.
Yeah, I know. The acceleration on this card is quite hard because we don't have the advanced memory management stuff right on the DRI. But from a hardware viewpoint, I really prefer the NVIDIA design of the hardware to the ATI design. It's a lot cleaner. And it was actually developing on the NVIDIA card is easier because... The card will not always crash and will sometimes point you at the precise point where you did a mistake. Say, hey, there, you made a mistake, guy. I can't accept this value for this field. The ATI card will never do that. So, I don't think I'll ever go back.
Damn. One other thing, I'm sure you've seen that someone, I can't remember the guy's name, has put together a pledge thing where people pledge $10 and the idea is to get $10,000 and give it to you guys to do something with, to make Nouveau better.
Yeah.
What do you plan to do with the money? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, actually, initially we didn't, you know, we didn't expect this pledge to succeed.
Are you going to spend it on women?
Yeah, and all the people have been so supportive of our work, I think it's really great for them. At the moment, we say, well, we'll probably, if it works out, we'll probably use it to get newer graphics card. I mean, we don't have, at the moment, we don't have any GeForce 8000 kind GPU. Obviously, we cannot support them for this reason. That's something we would like to do. Once we've got the MV40 support working correctly, I think it would be quite great to be able to buy new cards. We don't have much, you know, we do this in our free time mostly, so we don't have much money to devote on our own for that. So yeah, it's quite great to have a pledge.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for talking to us. Is there anything else you wanted to say to the people listening?
Well. Yeah, fellow developers actually wanted me to speak with a French accent. I'm sorry.
Give us the web address.
Yeah, tell us in a French accent where people should go to find out more about Nouveau.
Yeah, so to learn more about Nouveau, you should go to nouveau.net.
Fantastic.
Right. So, yeah.
Stefan, you're a superstar. Nouveau. Thank you very much.
Keep working on it.
Sorry. Yes.
Please.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. We'll think you're doing a brilliant job. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
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 Squawking. That's something that happens quite often in the open source community.
Let's try not make any jokes about that word.
No.
Because it's obvious.
Well, okay, well, we're going to rise above the obvious, aren't we?
We're,
look at us. We're rising above the obvious.
We are professional.
although, to be honest, I have nothing now. I'll carry on. Okay, yeah.
It occurs to me, when you're looking for a piece of software to fit the bill, let's just take here, let's say...
What would it be?
Let's say maybe the area of network management software.
Right, see that.
All right, okay.
Or let's take any other region of mobile software.
Well, you look at what's already out there. You look at the packages that are already out there, and you think, you try them.
You do.
You rate them against the merits against different ones, and you think, quite often you'll find that one package will do some of what you want.
Yeah.
Another package will do other bits of what you want, and quite often you've won't find a package that does everything, right?
Mm.
So here's the thing. Is it possible or reasonable to expect the opposite of a fork to happen? So in other words, the two best bits of a package merge together to make one.
Has that not happened before?
I don't know. Has it ever happened before?
Isn't that the whole idea behind like pluggable kind of like webmin?
Because it should be really easy because it's open source, right? So if you're, say you're network management software does really good graphing, but it just doesn't do email alerts. Surely you could just look at the source code of some other project and see how they did it.
All right. You mean not like...
No, the source code is out there for that reason.
It depends on your point of view. Right. I mean, if your software is built so all of its individual bits are done in kind of libraries,
right?
So there's a library to do the email alerts or whatever, then you could include that library in another piece of software relatively easily.
Okay.
But it's a bit more difficult. In some cases, the stuff that does it in one piece of software wouldn't be particularly compatible.
I'm
with
not
the
saying
other
you could take the exact source code and just drag and drop it.
It's at this point that the kind of the.
So have you ever had that, by the way? Have you ever looked at like? Oh, you have, because you've looked for a sound program
and it didn't
do what you wanted.
Yeah, entirely. And some, I suppose, the kind of the beard patrol are now going to say. And the whole, one of the best things about Unix is that you've got lots of little things that do one thing,
pluggable tools,
and you put them together. And I think that, I suppose that's kind of the philosophy in some ways, is you're talking about applications that do things, and the idea of taking chunks of those applications and putting them together. I suppose this is the kind of thing behind the old Unix days, is that you could put lots of bits and pieces together.
You could, though.
But it's more difficult to do that at a desktop kind of level. Is that what you're talking about, like a desktop
application? It's difficult at an application level, because if you're suggesting that I did it that way, basically you'd have to install both applications and only use parts of one and parts of the other.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Or every application would be like a little command line tool that was called by the UI.
At that level, you could,
Or more importantly, every application isn't a command line tool. Every application is built up of a collection of lots of small command line tools. So your network management software would be one controlling very small application, and it already talks to a little program which does emails and a little program which does graphs and so on.
It's the whole pipeline approach, isn't it? GStream uses that kind of thing. I mean,
absolutely. So if you wanted your new application to do graphs because it didn't do it, or some other application, then you'd shell out to Dot or whatever it is
you've got RRD tool, haven't you? And everybody kind of does that. But I'm talking at a kind of a bigger scale.
Right.
Well, when you start to make things useful by grouping them together, the grouping together of things is where you want to.
It ain't that easy, though. I mean, imagine going, I really like... your car, I think, I really like the dashboard in your car, but can't just rip it out and bolt it into my car.
No, but that's none of the
connectors. That's a physical thing where the software isn't.
That's one of those analogies that Pete Savage was on about.
Well, no, but the point is that it doesn't work. And you're going, well, that's totally ridiculous. But obviously it's possible for software. Well, yeah, it's a car, it's a physical object, but it's still got holes to bolt things together and wires that plug things together.
Yeah.
But it is a lot more difficult.
But the designers of the Mercedes dashboard could look at the designers of the A6 dashboard and, well, if A6 hadn't patented the whole thing, they could possibly implement it and say, oh, they've done that really well. Let's include that in ours.
I don't think anyone who's written a network management piece of software that doesn't do email alerts doesn't know how to do email alerts.
Well,
they just haven't done it yet.
All right, okay.
I think, though...
I don't think anyone would go, if you said do email alerts, they would go, well, we could do, but we don't understand how to send an email from our program. That's too difficult.
getting back to the original question, though, I mean, I think it would be good to be able to do things like that. But you know, to do the opposite of a fork, essentially, and take two programs.
Yeah.
But merge them together into a single direction. So imagine you took something like...
That's what I'm talking about.
So imagine you took something like...
Rose Garden and Ardor.
Yeah, but... Are you on about taking the two programs and making them one project?
Yes.
Right. You're not
a bit like at the end of Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
The opposite of a fork.
No, but you insinuated as if what you were talking about was taking features from two programs that are running
right
relatively similarly,
yeah,
and using them together in the same instance, not necessarily
merging
the programs together. So you've got one program.
So you've got two
Rose Door or whatever. Which
one's written in C, one's written in Kylix or something like that.
Can you imagine the cacophony of shit that Rose Garden and Arnold
would make together? Look at you, Mr. Jocosha author, better than everyone in the whole world.
Well, fucking is better than everyone else.
Yeah, to be honest.
yeah, I mean, it's...
We're going to sit on this fucking high horse.
The problem is that most forks aren't really done on the basis of code. They're done on the basis of philosophy. So right. The two-bit software are going in different philosophical directions.
So has it ever happened then? Can you think of any time where something has forked and then someone has grabbed the two forks and like merged it into one?
Something makes me want to say something like a Mozilla project where they've taken stuff, but not like...
No, I can't think of anything. I can think of ones where they forked it and the fork has become the one everyone cares about.
That's happened with
EGCS becoming the new GCC and so on.
Hell, we're going back a bit now, aren't we?
We are. Sorry.
That used to be like big news.
It did. But, I mean, I think...
Sorry, I fell asleep there for a bit.
It would be doable.
Sorry, I was sick in my mouth.
Theoretically, but... It would be really, really massively hard.
See, I'm amazed that it doesn't happen more because all the sources available to everyone.
Yeah, but it'd be really difficult. Really, massively, hugely difficult.
It would be really cool, though, to see that happen with certain things.
Let's talk about things that we'd like to see.
The two forks could keep going in their different directions if they wanted, but you could also have one where it's merged together.
I'll give you an example. I find with media players on Linux, particularly. Each media player
is broken.
Yes, it is.
Right clicks, copy link location. It's a pain in the arse.
Each media player does something in particular really well. So, for example, Banshee does the iPod sync stuff really well.
Yeah.
Rhythmbox does playing MP3s and OGs really well.
Exactly what I'm talking about.
And then you get things like Exile, which does radio stuff really well. Mm. But each of them's got loads of crap in there, and I'd like to see that kind of thing converge together, and that kind of thing because. So I think it would be good, but of course, even with just those three as an example,
it's pretty bloody difficult.
You've got a C application, a Mono application, and a Python application.
Okay, so the lesson we should learn here is everyone should write in C.
Oh,
right?
Fuck off!
A real language.
You and your
that's why it's not. It's all
your shit. Have you ever actually written a fucking C program?
Yes, I have.
How long ago was it?
It's more than 9 years ago.
Shut the fuck up.
Eight sat here with his flat cap on, fucking whip it down his trousers, scrubbing a step. You want to use a man's language?
I want to use a man's language.
I would like, but there is that to some extent. I mean, if you look at Banshee, for example, the iPod stuff isn't built into Banshee. I think you use iPod Sharp. I think, which is a library. Yeah. It's a library for mono programs, but mono programs can use an iPod by using iPod Sharp. People do try and, to some extent, factor out cool stuff into a library.
Hmm.
You can then pick up that library if you want to.
Yeah.
So let's go...
Sorry, I was just going to say, I'm sure that our listeners are going to know some applications. Some gimp's going to mail in and say, there was this combination of Vi and Ed... Ved. You know, it's like someone's going to mail in with something.
Vimmax.
So listeners, do send us your comments. And what are you going to say, Matt?
Sorry? So, should we go around the group and each say which two applications we'd like to see? Yeah. Skiing. We'll go around, or what is it? A daisy chain, that's it. Go around and each of us say which two projects we'd like to see merged.
You put me on the spot now, I don't know. It would probably be something along the media line if it wasn't network management tools. Yeah.
I'd like to see...
Or maybe mail servers.
I'd like to see Rhythmbox and Banshee.
Mail clients, I'd like to see.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Evolution and Thunderbird get.
I really
like the fact that it's dead easy to write Thunderbird plugins, Thunderbird extensions, but it's quite hard to write Evolution extensions. The Evolution people are going to go, no, it's really, really easy, honestly. It's not all about sucks. E-plugin.
I really like...
I'm using Evolution now, because Thunderbird crashed all the fucking time. To be honest with you, what I'd like is I'd like to merge Thunderbird and Bash. I'd like the fact that Bash never crashes. That had to be merged with Thunderbird, so Thunderbird never crashed.
You're an old
Mutt
user, right? So you want to combine Mutt
with
Thunderbird.
Thunderbird and Bash.
Yeah, because I will.
He likes the non-crashiness of Bash.
I like the non-crash. I've never had Bash crash, not once in 10 years. Right?
I'd like them
to take that out of Bash and put it in Thunderbird.
I'd like to combine
That's the
Thunderbird.
Non-crash routine, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
Thunderbird and Jenna Jameson's breasts. That's not going to happen, is it?
No, I'd like Thunderbird and Evolution.
That would make getting your email really fun.
Be brilliant.
It? So the send and receive button would be.
That's the noise. Aid's got the noise. Do it again. Do it once more.
No, I won't do it.
No, no, what about writing new mail?
That would be the other side. That would be... Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah.
So you have to know how to control
it. And it's the most intuitive user interface, isn't it?
It is.
Like, you know,
it's the only intuitive user interface.
Tits.
The nipple. Everything else is
oh,
learned.
God.
That's not true, actually. Breastfeeding's really hard for the baby. They have to learn how to do
it.
Yeah,
it's in bollocks. Yeah. Postscript that in there.
Oh, yeah, it's hard for the baby, yeah.
Bitty.
Surely it's like a built-in thing.
No, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
It is yeah, it's
no, they have
be.
To learn how to do it.
No.
They do.
Fucking they're born with it, surely.
I fear that this segment may be going off the rails a little bit.
Sorry, yeah. Moving off from nipples and back to what you'd see, like, see combined.
But seriously,
Matthew P. Raffel.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, some I'd like to see Thunderbird work with Evolution Data Server, which is slightly different, but that's what I want, so screw you.
Just, I agree with you. Someone was trying to do it.
Just Sunbird or whatever it's called.
No, Sunbird's the calendar thing.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But someone was trying to make Thunderbird work with Evolution Data Server, but I don't know how far they got with it. Or they were trying to write Thunderbird Data Server, which does the same thing as Evolution Data Server, one or the other.
That'd be good, yeah.
Talking about factual inaccuracies or impossibilities.
Were we?
More
yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, about, you know, breasts and whatnot. Have you seen that bread that's got no crusts on it?
It's rubbish.
Yes, invisible
horrible,
crust bread. It's amazing. From Hovis.
You've got, like, white bread and... you got white bread and brown bread in this one bread with no crusts.
There were two different kinds.
See, I was concerned we were going off the topic.
It's brilliant, though. I was like, I've been trying to get it straight in my mind. How the fuck do they make that bread?
There are two different kinds of it. The first one is one where they bake an ordinary loaf of bread and then just cut the edges off.
And they don't do that because it's got rounded corners.
Yeah, no. And the other one is they bake an invisible crust. It's the Hovis one.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's got to be very clever. Chemicals, hasn't it?
No.
It makes your hair curly.
Basically, they just bake it.
That's if you.
They bake it slowly and on a low temperature, so the crust doesn't go brown.
How do you know?
Impressive stuff.
You don't know any better.
You know? Yeah, how the fuck do you know?
I love the way our segments are all well structured and.
What he wants emerge is a mangina.
A mangina.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty cool.
Look at my mangina.
It also sounds like a disease.
Okay, back in the show now, we've got Miguel de Caza. How you doing, Miguel?
Welcome back.
I'm doing fine, Jonah, thank you.
Good, good. So, what's going on with Mono? You know, what's been happening since we spoke to you last, which was ages ago?
Well, a lot has happened. So we finally managed to ship Mono 1.2, which was important because for the first time we shipped the Windows Forms API, an API that the Windows guys used to build GUI applications, and now we can bring those guys over.
Okay. I think you were talking about being almost ready for that last time, so...
Yeah, so, well, you know, I'm building myself a reputation in the open source circles for completely missing the deadline.
Wow. My own estimate. I don't think you're alone there.
Well, there's that funny story about Evolution that I keep telling people that when we got funded for Zeemian and we decided we're going to build Evolution, we figured we were now a serious company because we got VC money. And the first thing we did is we went and purchased a desktop computer and we purchased Microsoft Project. And we figured we need to track this in a serious tool
for
a serious business. And so I remember we spent the night entering data. And I went to sleep around 3 a.m., not stayed up all night typing data into Microsoft Project. And in the morning around 9 a.m., he's still entering data. And he says, well, I think I'm almost ready with the plans for the company.
Okay,
and he
you had
the
saved
F9
it, right?
Button. And we're supposed to ship Evolution in 4 months and, like, IPO in 6 months or something like that. So... So it actually took 2.5 years to ship.
Wow.
So we're pretty bad at predictions, but I think it was more a matter of actually shipping something that we're proud of, with in the case of Mono Windows Forms, than shipping something earlier. And kind of in the process, we also, as the team was working on Windows Forms, a separate part of the team was already working on 2.0 features. So that's what's been keeping us busy. I mean, not everybody can really write GUI code. Some people's expertise are in other areas.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. So how does Mono match up to the .NET framework version numbers? So is 2.0 of .NET matching up with 2.0 of Mono, or are they not?
Yeah, just for the sake of explaining that to people, what we're going to do is we're going to make the Mono 2.0 release match the APIs in .NET 2.0.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Oh, cool.
With Mono 1.2, the situation is a little bit blurrier because it is a .NET 1.1 implementation, but it has about half of the 2.0 implementation in place.
Okay.
But
oh.
Yeah. I mean, and there was a long discussion about. Anyways, it's not a terribly interesting discussion, but the issue was: should we call it 1.9? Or should we call it 1.5?
Yeah.
I mean, is it really worth calling it only 1.2? It seems like a minor upgrade, and it tripled in size. So, but wow. We figured 1.2 was a well-known number, so we just stayed with that, and we went with Windows Forms.
Cool.
But I think that the major, I think that probably the most interesting development that has happened. In addition to Mono 1.2, was the fact that there was this guy in the community that we just hired, called Jonathan
Post,
and he built this little tool called MoMA. And MoMA is a little program that that goes through your Windows binary,
yeah.
Right.
And compares what your Windows binary has and all the calls that it's making into .NET. And it checks whether we have that implemented or whether we have flagged that
cool,
API
that's as pretty cool.
Non-portable or if it has any issues or things like that. And at the end, you have the option of sending us a report telling us, sending us basically all of this information.
That's pretty neat. I mean, this kind of neatly segues into my next question, which is I've noticed that you've been blogging about applications that the Mono community have managed to get working with Mono and things like that. How much are you working with kind of application authors to make sure that it's, their applications are running sort of smoothly on Mono, particularly with the sort of system.windows.form sort of side of things?
So I would say that before Mono 1.2, most of the users was for of Mono users were from the Windows crowd were in the form of ASP.NET, right?
Right.
And the Linux crowd was mostly using GTK Sharp. And okay. Windows Form has kind of opened the doors to a very bizarre community that I kind of didn't know existed before. Well, I kind of knew that they existed. I just didn't know it was that large,
right.
Which is the Windows Forms community. A lot of people just build these quick applications, internal IT applications with Windows Forms, and they put them together very quickly. So, I mean, just looking at the MoMA statistics, so far we have received more than 1,500 application reports for MoMA for us to process. And from these 1,500 applications, I would say one-third of them can be ported today with Mono without any changes.
Fantastic.
Cool.
That's pretty cool.
Another third is probably, it's gonna require some work from us.
Okay.
But I would say that within 3 months, we should be able to get this second third. And the third is going to require the individual ISVs to actually make some changes into their source code. So, and it can go anywhere from 1 week of work to a couple of months of work. And there's some applications that we're not even going to even attempt or even try to get those people to port.
Okay.
But it's a little bit interesting. I mean, it's a little bit overwhelming to have 1,500 applications being submitted to this thing.
Yeah.
But I think that the most interesting result for us has been that before this, we basically went through the API and figured, well, I'm going to implement this class, right? And you implement basically, and you kind of start, let's say, in alphabetical mode, right? So you say, well, there's a class called Activator. Let's implement Activator. And then you will implement the class that begins with a B, and then the one that begins with a C, and so on.
Mm.
So there's not much direction other than whatever random order you pick. It can be alphabetical. It can be your favorite API,
okay.
Right? And we're kind of stumbling around. Like, there's a lot of work left to be done about something like 25,000 APIs missing, and we didn't have any good data from the people of what they were using from those 25,000 APIs.
Mm.
And with MoMA, we today know that from those 26,000 APIs, people are barely using 10% of it.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're only missing 2,600 APIs to run all of these applications that have been submitted. So that's very good because it means that although .NET has a large API space, as I said, we can get a thousand of these applications just by implementing one-tenth of the whole.
That's
API
awesome. Really useful information.
I think that those are pretty good news.
Cool. I mean, one of the .NET applications I tried to run on Mono was called Cinderella. It's an RSS reader.
And Sharp Develop.
Sorry?
Did you say Sharp Develop?
No. Cinderella, it's called. It's an RSS reader. This was a little while back, and it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is because it embedded an Internet Explorer widget.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I've got no idea whether that kind of thing has been fixed since I tried it out. But is that kind of thing a problem? Something that's not actually really part of the .NET API, but calling into Windows specific things. Do you find there's a lot of that?
Absolutely, and that's exactly the last third that I was talking about, that I said this will require some changes. That's precisely the kind of changes that are required when people p-invoke into the Win32 API.
Yeah.
In some cases, so in the particular case of Cinderella, and a lot of people that were p-invoking were basically p-invoking so they could embed IE. What Microsoft did is that for 2.0, it was obvious that .NET was missing a piece in that area. So what they did for 2.0 was basically they introduced a web control, which is a managed API, and which we're going to be basically implementing using Mozilla. So that all that class of applications that depended on IE, those issues are gone. And it's actually showing up on the profiles that people are moving in that direction.
Good.
From the more reports. But I think that the point that you make is actually a very good one. I would say that one-third of the applications that we received, when I said that they would require some porting effort on the side of the ISV, it's precisely because they p-invoked in one way or another.
Right.
So we have a full list of p-invokes, and we actually publish the full list so we know what people are using them for. And sometimes it's sometimes they're calling into some portable libraries like all of OpenGL. All of those we can ignore because the same API exists on Linux. But sometimes they do link deeply into Win32. And in those cases, they have to change their software. Now, for the sake of actually assisting people to do this porting, we're working with a couple of ISVs right now. We're going through the process of signing cross NDAs and things like that, so we can get access to their source code, and we can see what they're doing, and we can provide them with equivalent calls for the Linux operating system.
Okay.
So basically, what we're going to give these people is a library for porting software. So if in the past they were doing p-invokes, we're going to say, well, whenever you use this p-invoke, instead use this API
instead,
call,
right?
Which on Windows will just do the p-invoke, and in Linux will do whatever needs to be done on Linux.
Right. Can people p-invoke into Wine?
They can be invoking. I mean, the problem is that both Wine and Mono need to provide some of the same services. So the problem that we had in the past with using Wine, probably 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we're using Wine within Mono for doing Windows forms, was that integrating the Mono VM and the Wine VM in the same process was not pretty, and they kept fighting each other for signals and handlers and the namespace. So it's an open research issue. It's been done in the past. We did it in the past, but we never got the integration to work as well as it should have been. So I would say it's probably very difficult.
Right, okay.
Which is a shame, but...
I'm interested to know what sort of business model there is around Mono, because obviously you can see why Microsoft would produce .NET, but why are you interested commercially in developing Mono?
Why was I interested initially?
Commercially. What's the kind of, I suppose, bluntly, the financial benefit for Novell? What's the business model?
Well, to Novell, there are two reasons. I would say, and it depends on the day of the week. I will give you one answer first or the second one first.
Okay.
But I would say that the ISV market for Windows applications, I mean, the ISVs for Windows are so huge compared to what we have in Linux and the Mac OS that it's not even funny. And the problem has to do a lot with not really the large horizontal applications like, say, Office or Word. We got replacements for all of those or paint programs or things like that.
Yeah.
But for all the little business vertical applications, things like managing a dental office, like X-ray management, like we've heard from this company. Anyways, there's enterprise porn management or adult content management, right? There's all these things that in vertical markets that people just happen to be using Windows in very large scales, and they want to target Linux as well. So a commercial interest of us, of course, is we want to bring those guys over to Linux.
Mm.
So we want to basically be able to sell more more Linux into these companies. And in a way, applications drive sales in the platform. Mm. So we can have a great operating system, and it's great for web applications, and it's great for many things, and we're fantastic. But we want to get into all these little pockets, all these little vertical pockets, and I think it's worth going after those markets.
Mm. Obviously, the GNOME community have got a lot of interest in Mono.
That would be my second. I mean, that would be the second reason, right? Which was, well, we believe in accelerated development. We believe in manage, we believe it reduces our cost of development, and so on. So,
and how do you feel that, you know, it's been a much discussed thing, you know, is Mono being kind of like a dependency with GNOME and everything, and officially part of GNOME. How do you feel the discussions, what are your thoughts on the discussions that have happened there, and where the GNOME community currently stands looking at Mono?
Well, it's a little bit, I guess we got people with various degrees of opinion in the GNOME community, and there's obviously those of us that like Mono, and some of them like Mono because for all kinds of reasons. Some people think it might be more productive or not, or right? Mm-hmm. But I would say that the people who don't like Mono, they can be divided in those who have a genuine concern for the potential problem that patents might pose to the adoption of Mono.
Yeah,
and I think that... And I think that this concern is a valid concern, but it has been it's probably been underlined way more than it should have been. It's probably more in the minds of people than it should be, because software patents in general are a problem for every piece of software. And people tend to forget that. I mean, the fact that Microsoft produced the technology doesn't mean that other technologies won't infringe on other people's patents, and it might not even be Microsoft that owns the patent. It might be some patent troll somewhere else. And it's also not limited to the actual technology. It's actually patents actually cover ideas. So it's actually much worse than just implementing a Microsoft standard. It's about whether the idea somebody had conceived the idea many years ago, and they have the rights to put you in a very bad position. And I also think that a big part of the patent problem is, unless you matter financially, nobody's going to go after you. So I think that you're going to get lawsuits as soon as you become wildly financially successful, which explains a lot of the lawsuits against Microsoft and the lawsuits against Google. Didn't like 2 years ago some woman say that her grandfather had came up with the word Google? And was suing Google for I mean, as soon as there's money involved, I think people are going to go after you, and there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah.
So I would say that there is a real concern from the community, and I think it's a valid concern, but I think that it's very narrow and focused. If people really took a step back and said, well, what is the issue with patents, they would see that it's a no-brainer, that really everything can be affected, and what we need to do is come up with solutions against and effective patent defense mechanisms instead of shunning a technology just because it came from a big patent holder. Then I think that there's another group of people that don't like Mono along the lines of the Emacs versus VI discussion, right?
Yeah.
Or the FreeBSD versus Linux discussion, or KDE versus GNOME, which is more of a team thing. It's more of a one team wins, the other one loses. So there's certainly a group of people in that camp, and it's very hard to discuss with those people when it's a matter of emotion. It's very hard to have a rational discussion. So I don't worry too much about those people. I think that those are probably not very significant. And I'm sure that there's probably other cases, but I wouldn't be able to dissect why they don't like Mono.
Yeah, I know what you mean. One of the reasons, I must confess, I didn't used to like Mono, but I've changed my tune on it a bit. One of the reasons that I didn't like it initially was that a lot of the applications that people were building seemed to be things that we already had, but they were being rebuilt in Mono just because they weren't in Mono. But I think a lot of the applications that are there now, they've genuinely found their niche and they're doing well. Look at Banshee, for example. It's great. Tomboy. There's nothing like Tomboy anywhere else, I don't think. So are you happy with the ways people are using Mono?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am happy. Of course, course, I would like to be giving my opinion on every piece of technology, and I think that things should be done in a particular way. But what is fascinating is that people really have gone on their own and created their own universes. There's this university student called Alp Tucker. He's very, very young. He might be 19 years old or something.
Right.
He's based in the UK. And that guy has decided that, that's at least the impression I get. He has decided that he's going to re-implement everything that crosses his path in C#. So he's rewritten the X11 transport API, so he doesn't have to depend on libX11.
Does he have a girlfriend?
He rewrote dbus completely, so he wouldn't have to depend on the C dbus library. And it was really interesting because the C# dbus implementation that he wrote, the complete from scratch implementation, was much smaller than the Java binding to the C library. That was very interesting. So it turned out that doing a full binding was actually smaller than doing, doing a complete re-implementation was actually smaller than doing a binding. And what is fascinating about this is that once we got this experience from Alp, the Java guys actually said, well, why don't we give it a shot, right? And it turns out that it was a much better path. So the Java guys now also have a completely managed implementation, okay, which is smaller than the original binding one, and it gives you much nicer integration features into the language.
Yeah.
So sometimes, yes, so people will go and redo things that already have good alternatives, but the results are sometimes surprising, and they're quite interesting, like this particular thing about dbus.
Yeah.
Cool. It turned out that maybe dbus should be a protocol, and we should have multiple implementations instead of dbus being a library that you have to link to.
That everyone links to, yeah. Mm-hmm. One other very brief question. The Novell Microsoft deal, we don't want to go too much into it, because we know it's not really anything to do with you, but have you got any particular thoughts on it? I mean, is it going to have any major effect on Mono, do you think?
Well, I it does. I mean, I mean, I know that the Linux community and the open source community and the free software community didn't really like this deal, and I understand, and there's a lot to be debated in that area. But what was really interesting was that when we're approaching Windows developers, there was always a sense of, is this endorsed by Microsoft in any form? Well, if we port to Linux, will Microsoft come after us? So there was a fear that some of these people had. And this agreement basically has lifted that veil from any of the Windows developers that we're talking to.
Yeah.
It also got to the point that Mono, for the first part, was actually present at a major Microsoft conference. We were at the Microsoft TechEd conference in Barcelona, thousands of Windows developers. And we talked to, I don't know, hundreds of people that came to the Mono booth. And some people came with USB sticks to try their apps on Mono.
Really?
And it was really interesting to see the Windows developers
quite a lot of interest.
Reaction. So it's a completely different reaction on the Windows side of the world than on the open source side of the world.
Yeah. All these guys with their USB sticks, did their apps mainly work or mainly not work?
They did work.
Excellent.
They did work. That was the best thing, because I said, hey, listen, just so you know, Mono is 1.1 implementation of .NET. So many people said, sure, we're still on the 1.1, so no problem. So the applications did work. A couple of them came with 2.0 applications, and as I said, listen, this might fail because it's a 2.0. So about, I would say some of them did fail, and some of them did work. One guy, actually a Microsoft employee, came back and said, hey, listen, my brother's got a Mac, and I wrote this astronomy software for him. I would like him to run it, but I wrote it in .NET. And I said, well, listen, .NET 2.0 is not going to cut it. So he came back half an hour later with the code recompiled with 1.1, and ran just like a charm.
Fantastic.
So, yes, it was working. And you have to keep in mind, we're not ready 2.0 implementation. So,
right.
So it was quite surprising that...
That's awesome.
No, good one. That's
were able
really
to
cool.
Do that.
Okay, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks,
Miguel.
Thanks again, Miguel.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, guys.
Best of luck with the project as you go on with it.
And we'll speak.
All right.
And we'll speak to you soon.
Goodbye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Recently, I've been playing some games. Sex games.
A man
on
of
Linux.
Your age.
Yes, really? Not sex games.
What sort of games?
Really? Games on Linux.
I bet it was for Tux Racer, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Tux Racer.
The
height of Linux gaming technology is Tux Racer.
But you can't play any decent games, can you?
No, it depends on your point of view. That's exactly what I want to talk about.
Gnomestones?
That sort of thing, except not quite as simplistic
as that.
Is that
some kind of kidney stone simulator?
You were playing Shanghai, weren't you?
What's Shanghai?
It's like Mauam, but not by Harry.
No, one called Enigma, but sort of puzzly games.
Those games are shit. They're
bored even listening to it.
Is it like the Da Vinci Code or something?
It's not an FPS, right?
No, it's not. And that's the point.
It's
not
frames
right?
per second, is it?
Lots of people seem to be saying, when they talk about games on Linux, all everyone ever talks about is 3D first-person shooters.
No, they don't.
And that's it. What other games they talk about?
Well, people talk about games in general, don't they?
No.
No.
No, when people say there's no support, there's people no games on Linux, or there's no support
game
for games on Linux.
Oh, okay.
What they actually mean is there are no first-person shooters being published by commercial companies for Linux.
I think when people say there's no commercial games for Linux, they're not just referring to first-person shooters.
What about Beneath the Steel?
I have done some research,
what are they
about
missing?
Six.
Yeah, there.
I think people want to see things like The Sims and things like that for Linux.
But there are games like The Sims. The thing I want to talk about is
what games like The Sims, apart from Second Life.
One of the things that that people say is blocking games on Linux is a lack of proper 3D support.
Yes.
Right? And at the moment, I mean, this is why I asked the Nouveau guys about this, whether it's easier to give you enough 3D to do compies but not to do games. The answer is it isn't, which is a bit of a shame.
Mm.
But I wonder whether we should say, look, there are loads of other games, and stop saying, well, we can't have games for Linux because there's no 3D support.
Mm.
So are you playing... And because there's loads and loads of art that needs to be done.
Mm.
You know, there are plenty of other game types that aren't first-person shooters. There's need loads of
3D. There's plenty of games that don't need art or 3D. So they're fucking on the one person.
There's not plenty of games that don't need art.
Oh no, I've been stabbed by an asterisk.
Art's a lot easier to do.
So if you don't have to build loads of 3D of Gears of War, you say you don't need that. Go and play 2D Tiddlywinks.
It is
much better for you.
You'll be free. I mean, take a game like The Sims, for example. And there were loads of games by Maxis, the company made The Sims. Yes. They started off with SimCity and did loads of other sort of simulation games.
With an armadillo.
And there were lots of games like that for Linux. I mean, there's one called Globulation 2.
That sounds like a disease.
Well, yeah, I didn't name the fucker.
I've got Globulation, you've got Globulation 2.
Yeah.
Globulation 2, this time it's really disgusting.
Maybe we should have worn a condom.
But that's... because that sort of game doesn't require incredibly complicated graphics and lots of art... You can play it, and there's just as much gameplay as there is in everything
defeatist?
Else. Not necessarily. The point is that when people say we can't play games on Linux, what that means is we can't play first-person shooters on Linux.
But just because that's what they mean, that people want to play, isn't it?
Mean
are you sure though?
Well, look at the games market.
What do you mean? Look at the, there's some
Walk
games like
HMD
that, but there are lots and lots and lots of other games that are also on
sale. Yeah, they're
sale.
Tucked in that little basket at the bottom that says reduced.
So, what was the last game you bought then?
Flashback.
I can't play games, I run Linux.
Right, okay, so you know fuck all about it, so shut up. Right, next.
All right, Mr. fucking Sudoku 2D.
Well, no, the point is that there are lots of other games like that, and I wonder whether we should say, okay...
And they'll be fun and educational,
we
right?
We can't meet the needs of the high-end 3D gaming market at the moment, so why not concentrate on some other stuff and come back to that later,
what, like
once the new people have got it working. That sort
like
of
the
thing.
Runes of Zendos.
Yeah.
I think...
If you like, wherever that is.
And using... Proprietary drivers isn't an option, right?
Well, if people want to use proprietary drivers, they can go ahead and do it. But there are at least some people who don't want to use proprietary drivers and think that the fact that there are proprietary drivers is blocking stuff. Oh, yeah, I'm the only person who's complained about the Ubuntu decision. The only one. There's just me, a lone voice in the wilderness.
And it's only Ubuntu is the problem when it comes to proprietary drivers. Yeah.
Oh,
but hang on. What's that? What's
beer.
That? I can't hear that, was it?
Beer! Exactly. I mean, that's the point. And... people want the 3D stuff. I mean, the Ubuntu decision doesn't seem to be really about games at all. It's about compies and Beryl on the desktop.
No, it's just about
compies.
We don't like free software anymore. We're not interested. Change tack.
Well, okay.
I'm fucking joking for those already writing the email to show it. Like
no, there you go. Right. I spent 5 seconds there defending you, but now I can't be bothered. Yeah, you're fucking selling out the Linux community. Right. But, I mean, there aren't lots of other games.
So are you saying?
I mean, adventure games, for example. Perfect case in point.
I used to love playing...
adventure games rule.
Exactly. Professional adventure writing system. I used to use that on my Spectrum.
There are lots of things. And they do still require some art.
Hang on.
And they are still...
Oh, not text adventures.
Did you say adventure games rule?
Well, they used to when
they
I
did,
was like 10.
Yeah, but
go
north. Dysentery used to rule. We don't fucking have that much now.
No, but that's not true.
Just go and look at the toilet.
Adventure gaming was, for a while, the biggest section of the market.
And so were BBSs. the biggest section of online services market.
Oh, yeah.
It's shite compared to what we've got now. I can see where you're coming from in the fact that you can have an entertaining game without necessarily having 3D graphics and lots of snazzy art. There is gameplay. I mean, Tetris. Tetris is a good example.
I'm not just talking about ones where you say, "Oh, the gameplay is just good," because people say that about NetHack. They say, "Oh, it's just as good as as Half-Life 2, but it doesn't have the graphics." But you can do games that don't require all this incredibly powerful 3D hardware that we can't support.
But like Civilization,
the point I was going to make was you can. But the games are fucking boring.
Yeah, you say
people want 3D graphics.
Some people,
realistic.
Yeah,
well, most people. I'm talking about the general kind of gaming market.
Nice.
But I think most people want. They want immersive 3D games.
Is that when your parents used to buy you a game? It'd be educational and much better.
Any fucking parent who cons their children with educational games needs shooting.
The point is that the games market. I don't do it. No, Neve's favourite game is Frozen Bubble.
Right, but suspect Neve's only game is Frozen Bubble.
No, she's played loads and she really likes it. He's coming back to it. But the point I'm trying to make here is that the voice of gamers, I think, is vastly out of proportion to the number of actual fucking gamers there are. You know, I mean, if you look at popular games, the most popular games aren't first-person shooters at all. They're massively multiplayer.
I think you're
fucking millions of people.
I think you think that the only games that are 3D are first-person shooters.
No, I don't think that.
There's lots and lots of games out there. I mean, for example, people like playing things like Resident Evil and Silent Hill, right?
That's 3D.
And they're 3D games, right? But they're not first-person shooters. They're kind of like adventure games. And people enjoy those kinds of games. People like games like Crash Bandicoot, you know, like 3D platform games. And there's all those kinds of games. It's not Spyro. Just first. I think most people, most people don't. I think most people want 3D games, but they want variation. They don't just want
the thing. I'd be
first person shooters.
The thing I'd be interested to see is how much
frog in my throat.
How much 3D acceleration you actually need to? I mean, take let's pick Crash Bandicoot as an example. I imagine that would be if someone wrote something like Crash Bandicoot, that'd be perfectly supported under Linux because you don't need a currently high end 3D card to play it. You could play it on a really old 3D card as long as you had 3D acceleration, it would be fine, and they're all supported.
Now, I don't know much about 3D graphics, but
yeah, all the old. I mean, the old ATI Radeon cards, Radeon 7000s, Radeon 9000s are supported fine. I assume the NVIDIA one's fine because the NV driver exists for a reason. It doesn't just do nothing.
It does 2D.
I thought it did 3D acceleration. Well, certainly the ATI ones. I don't know much about NVIDIA. But ATI Radeons, up till about the 9300 series or whatever, they're supported fine. And Crash Bandicoot would work fine on one of them. The game came out 10 fucking years
ago.
I don't know if it would
because it's not just. I mean, with recent cards. Obviously, they've got faster. You know, they can do the same things that cards did 10 years ago, but just a lot faster. But even games like Crash Bandicoot, I don't know much about 3D, but they use special kind of texturing things, and they have, you know, bump mapping, all that kind of stuff that's supported. I'd be surprised. I'd be really interested to find out if a game like Crash Bandicoot, if it was written.
I don't think
could run
since you lot mocked Tux Racer, right?
Which is bollocks.
The game's bollocks, but I don't think that Tux Racer's graphics are significantly less complicated than Crash Bandicoot's.
Have you played Crash Bandicoot?
Yes, I played it yesterday, right? Which is more recently than Yao played it.
The only reason why you played it yesterday is because I gave you the fucking game.
That's not the point. I've played it more recently than
on
Yao.
On what system?
What?
On what system?
On a PlayStation 1.
All right.
Right?
But if you look at the game, although he says PlayStation 1, it's a pretty advanced NBA 3D game.
Yeah, but it's not. Tux Racer was relatively complicated graphics.
I thought the
Tux Racer is 3D graphics.
But
the PlayStation doesn't
have 3D graphics. It's all sprite based. The PlayStation 1.
Bollocks. So it's all 3D graphics.
Oh yeah, I was thinking the Dreamcast.
No, see, Matt talks bollocks about that. But the two things aren't significantly different in graphics complexity. But people aren't interested in doing that kind of thing. When they say, we want games, what they mean is we want the latest cards to be supported. And ignore the fact that there are a load of cards which are already supported, but if you buy a laptop now, you won't get one of those cards in it.
They aren't different.
Something I learned recently is that you talk bollocks, Ack, about games.
All right, so you, expert on games, doesn't play any games.
I wouldn't say you have no idea what gamers want these days.
No offense, but I wouldn't say that Ak is much more of an expert than Abe when it comes to games.
I
mean,
so at least I realise that people want 3D first-person shooters.
The point is, yes, I agree with you. The gaming market does want that, but I don't think they're that big a market. That's the point. All right, so
how many multi-billion?
That's why they've invested so much in third-generation consoles.
They're bigger than the movie industry.
Yeah, I was about to say that they made more money last year than the movie industry.
That's not that big, right? A lot of that is, like I say, the Morpig games.
No way!
Bullshit!
It seems like Tomb Raider or whatever they do these days.
The biggest games are not fucking massively multiplayer, massively online, massive
games.
Yes,
they are.
They are not.
Yes, they are. I'm going on what Gamer Sutra say.
Who are they?
Games Magazine.
Oh.
I mean,
you should have known that, Matt.
No, I was just thinking. I mean, if you know more than they do, then okay.
That's true. Oh, young and trendy.
No, you don't. My fucking chin.
The last Games Magazine I bought was CVG or whatever it's called.
Computer Video Games.
Yeah, with the Atari 2600.
Do you remember that guy who edited it? Jez something. He had like a
spiky
hair.
Bell.
But I think you are really, really underestimating the kind of the industry.
Power of the Schwartz.
See, whereas I just think is wrong,
because I might be wrong. I don't know this for sure, but I'd be very, very surprised.
Right in with your opinion.
Memorpigs are making all the money in the games world.
To be honest with you, it's going to get even worse now because part of Vista is the new Games for Windows platform, isn't it? Where they're trying to. Microsoft's doing a big marketing push where they've got a specification for the machine, the minimum machine, and it's all branded all very nicely. And the idea is that it's going to make it as easy to buy a game for your PC as you would for an Xbox or whatever.
We saw this in the early 90s, well, mid-90s. Do you remember the Multimedia Specification 1 and 2?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And Microsoft have tried this in the past.
Well, surely you just look at the minimum specs when you buy a game.
Well, no, they've tried it with the numbers thing, haven't they? Right. Your system's rated between 1 and 6 or something.
Yeah.
And the idea is it'll say on the box, you need a 3 or better machine to play this game.
What we should do is we should get some people on the show who are writing... Like, for example, I'd love to get someone from the Tremulous team on the show that are writing a game, or someone from even something like Lin City NG.
Or NetHack.
Hunt the Wumpus. BSD games.
Well, I mean, take The Sims as an example. Do you think it needs significantly complicated 3D graphics?
Yes.
The Sims?
The Sims.
Sorry, yeah. I like the way you said that.
It doesn't.
It does.
No, it doesn't.
You said like Crash Bandicoot, for example. I mean, with Crash Bandicoot, when you're playing that,
There's things like
there's running water in it, there's waterfalls, there's particle effect systems in there.
Yeah.
All that kind of shit isn't going to be... I'd be very surprised if it's going to be supported in Linux. And the point I'm making is that you've got, like, for example, I remember like there's a level in Crash Bandicoot where, you know, there's lily pads and things like that.
Yeah.
And the way all of that kind of animates and floats around...
People who know about graphics, then write in and tell us whether on a mid-range NVIDIA card, the sort of thing that's supported by the NV drivers, or a mid-range ATI card, you know, a Radeon 7000 or Radeon 9000 or whatever. I mean, Radeon 7000s, for example, played Max Payne fine.
Right.
And they're perfectly supported by the ATI drivers. And that's a 7000, let alone a 9000, which is also supported.
Right.
And Max Payne's quite a complicated graphical game.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing is supported.
Right.
And that's the point I'm trying to make here. If Max Payne supported, I think Crash Bandicoot would be as well.
And the other thing is that Tux Racer is nowhere near as fucking complicated as...
Well, whatever Max Payne is, then,
here's
if
the
you
thing,
like.
Though, right? I bet you if we won't have much success with games on Linux until the day where you can buy a game, stick it in, and know it's going to work. Whereas what will probably happen is you're just
going
to apt-get install. Oh, I need these libraries. Oh, hang on a sec. Oh, hang on, it's just crashed for no reason.
Well, but that's the how do you install software on Linux question.
Yeah,
well, so you auto-package it, right?
So you get an auto-package or whatever, or you get a deb for
it. Or it just runs from CD. Okay, end of the show.
Yeah.
Roll with the emails.
Time for emails.
Indeed.
But we got a reasonable selection this time, haven't we?
We did.
Much better than last time.
Well done, people, for responding to our cry for better emails.
Thanks for trying harder.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike Norris writes in. Love the show. Just a quick email to suggest it might be time to do a 5-minute catch-up with the open source graphics card project. Do you remember us talking about it?
We should do it, actually.
We should.
Well, apparently it's now out. I mean, it gives me He gives me a URL. They got the first photographs of it.
What's out are the developer versions of the cards.
Of course, yeah.
These are the ones with FPGA in them rather than dedicated chip.
He's put a link in there, but I think it's probably easier if you just Google for OGPN17 rather than me reading a massive URL out.
I'd look today. It's looking really good what they're doing.
It is.
I'd certainly buy one if it was not £5,000.
£2,000 or whatever it is.
So you'll be able to see the first photographs of the first genuinely open source graphics card. This is not a dream. This card is real. Exciting stuff.
I want to point out, Monsieur Bacon, that they're hoping to raise enough money from the sale of these cards at $5,000 apiece to fund development of the rest of the cards.
Yes,
and they're not going to do it if everyone goes, fuck me, that's a lot of money, and goes and buys a fucking NVIDIA GeForce card or something.
Well, those people who want to spend $5,000 on a fucking...
Open Advantage will buy you one.
Probably. Maybe for work there, yeah.
Well, Canonical aren't short of a bob or two, are they? Tell them you need one to interrelate better with the community or something.
Yeah, closely linked, aren't they? Speaking of Canonical, fellow co-worker...
Hello.
Tollef Fogg Heen.
Oh.
There is someone else that works there as well as you, Matt.
Tollef Fogg Heen.
Although you don't work for Canonical,
right? Sounds like a robot.
Who sounds like a robot. I discovered the UDS has written in, and this is the email. He says, hi. In your latest show, you mentioned that Beryl is not yet in Feisty.
That's because it isn't.
The reason for this is that the version uploaded just before Christmas has had some license problems.
Really?
And therefore, had to be rejected.
Blimey.
Open bracket. GPL licensed files without source being the most common problem.
Close bracket.
A new version has been uploaded and will probably make it through the queue of new packages.
Oh, there you go.
It's Norwegian, so not robotic.
Your email's read by Festival, indeed.
He ran out of batteries towards the end there. Thanks very much, Tollef Fogg.
What did he say the problem was?
Basically, there was some license issues, but they should be resolved by the time this show airs.
All right,
so,
cool.
So you can go and get your Beryl goodness and feisty.
Yeah, by the time Pam airs.
Revel.
It's the Revelator.
Oh, right.
With your ridiculous trousers. Look at the fucking state of those trousers.
The readers can't, Johnny.
They're my Primark slacks.
They're like, you know,
they're not slacks, they're made out of a towel.
Alright,
do you remember when MC Hammer
wearing jogging bottoms, alright?
MC Hammer brought out that song and had those ridiculous like bear trousers. Like that.
And the fact that you can't touch this.
The fact that they've got like string holding them up as well. It's a pikey belt.
Is that what happens when you get to work for Canonical? You end up tying your trousers up with string.
Well, no, it just means you sit up all day looking like a pikey, which both of them are managing fine.
Well, we have to pay for everything else, we might as well pay for our own clothes. Carry on.
What?
I pay for my own fucking clothes as well.
You don't get a Canonical lucky blue suit. Moving on.
Right, so.
What's a lucky blue suit?
Five people are laughing at that comment. Who went to look great in life.
Maybe you want to explain what a lucky blue suit is.
Yeah. No. Carry on.
No, please do.
No, I'm not going to. I'm not going to explain.
Jim Pye. Yep.
Pye.
Much like. Do you remember the old TVs that were made by Philips? But are actually called
Why are you
Pi?
Looking at me, Matt, as the oldest member of the team, I take it?
Who doesn't
I can't
TV.
See him. Yeah.
Yeah, man, like, I was really nervous. I was feeling really fucking Jim Pi.
Go on.
Anyway, he says, basically, it's following up on my prediction about something or other. He says, maybe not quite the same as the mentioned, whatever that means, but I see the word open appearing in company names and products a lot more now that the term open source has become popular. For example, OpenText Corporation at opentext.com. Great show. Cheers, Jim.
Is he from Jim at opentext.com?
Well, our friend Stuart strips the email addresses from the
He does.
Thing.
He does. Stuart.
Oh, he does,
the artist
actually.
Formerly known as Zach.
I ought to do something about that. Sorry, I'll make sure I put the email addresses in.
Mr. Langraj.
Email from a guy called Fred Kemp, who says...
Is that the Weatherman bloke?
Fred Kemp.
What's funny about Fred Kemp?
I have no idea.
You used to laugh at Patrick Finch as well, didn't you?
I still do.
Yeah,
yeah, and James Bellend. Sorry, carry on.
Fred Kemp. an entirely unfunny name.
Is his middle name Un?
Sorry.
What would his name be?
Unkemp.
Kempt. T.
God, it's like the Linux Link Tech Show for a second.
Yes.
They're our friends.
He had a mate. No, his son had a mate called Jeff. And this
right, okay.
This was it. Jeffety Jeff from Jeffshire.
That was his name. Jeff Cake, his name was. And he went...
Jeff Andrew Cake. Jeff Cake.
And apparently this Jeff guy had a t-shirt with serial killer written on it. And he wore it to a job interview. He said, no, I'll put a shirt over the top of it, button it up and everything. And he said, yeah, he came back, said, yeah, absolutely, the interview was really fine, no problem at all, but it was really hot, and towards the end, I unbuttoned my shirt. And then they went, oh, why have you got a t-shirt with serial killer on it?
Oh, dear.
Yes, so fucking unlucky, that bloke. But apparently, after his two-minute interview, he re-interviewed and then got hired later on, so, and his wife made sure he was dressed appropriately, so well done the man.
Was that because he threatened to kill them all?
Well, it's possible.
I'm surprised.
In parallel.
That, I'm surprised.
I know it's a serial killer.
I'm surprised that McDonald's are so discerning these days. Carry on.
Okay.
So thank you, Fred.
Carrying on with the Beryl Bling, Matt writes in. Matt. Not our tiny Matt.
You mean
Matt.
There's someone else called Matt outside this room?
There is somebody else who's
My
even...
My goodness.
That's just crazy talk.
Is it Matt Damon?
I was very interested in a discussion about Beryl and Compass in episode 9.
Good job you were.
I've been
running
Beryl on my laptop for a while now, and I was interested in your views. The discussion raised a couple of points. Firstly, if you're going to install Beryl, it's very advisable to use the Intel graphics chip, as they have free drivers. By the way, it's good advice, Zach.
Well done.
Yeah. It does not require a huge amount of graphics power. He's running on a fairly low spec machine, 1.5 Celeron, 512 megs of RAM, blah blah blah. If you turn all the options on, not only is it uber bling, it's also dog slow. It's just a matter of not enabling all the options. It looks shit anyway. Secondly, Beryl doesn't have to be the full bling. It's very configurable, blah blah blah. It's not hard to set up if you follow the guide at wiki.beryl-project.org. There's a set of instructions there, and he's fairly new to Linux, and it didn't take him very long to do.
Oh.
He said it's quite stable, it's been running on Edgy for months, and finally, he says, P.S. Jono, cars with 15 exhausts, have a look at www.barrysboys.co.uk.
Which I did, and saw no cars with 15 exhausts. And I did a fairly intensive search for a car with 15 exhausts.
Shin.
So you find me it.
I will do.
But let's take this discussion offline, gentlemen.
but did you like Barry Boys? Wicked. Loads of cars with massive Wild Tale spoilers and stuff.
So thanks, Matt. Thanks for pointing all that out. It's good stuff.
You know how we managed to get Java?
I'm not sure about this bling AM, but anyway.
And you know how we got Project Looking Glass open sourced? And all of these various things have happened.
Yeah.
I think we need, the next Lugradio project is that we should have...
open source Windows.
We need to encourage, far more important, the Beryl project to have a very large lesbian as their
from
logo.
Litchfield.
Beryl the lesbian from Litchfield.
So you
logo.
Don't know the little red diamond, you want a big lesbian.
big ugly lesbian with a fucking tash, you know, proper tash. Monkey whiskers.
Jono's views do not reflect
the views of Lugradio. No, they don't.
However, give me an email.
Johnny Main has sent us, which is a brilliant name.
Yeah, Johnny Main.
Fuck you.
You got a switch.
Hot damn, I'm Johnny Main, motherfucker. Johnny Main sent us an email called A Different Joke.
Can't be worse, let's face it.
Now, I've read this email before, and I pissed myself when I read it, so it's very good. He says, hi guys, love the show, keep up the good work. After hearing that shit homophobic joke on last week's show, I thought something had to be done.
Good.
Well done
for stepping up to the challenge.
It was a shit joke. So let's face it. He said, let's face it, there aren't that many jokes you can make about an operating system.
No.
So this is the best that I can do.
Okay.
So I think this is from Johnny himself.
He
says, here goes. He says, hoping to do his part and make a little bit of extra cash on the side, Novell CEO Ron Robo Sapien decides to give a donation at the sperm bank.
Nice.
See where this is going. Thanks for the sound effects. Having given his donation, he goes to the reception to get his payment. After handing over the check, the receptionist noticed that Ron RoboSapien looks very disappointed. Is that all? Asks Ron RoboSapien. I'm sorry, replies the receptionist. Were you expecting more? Well, of course I was, replies Ron. The last time I shook hands with a big, bald-headed dick, I made $240 million.
That's good.
Okay.
Which I think is an excellent joke, actually.
So fantastic joke from Johnny Main.
He should be doing a stand-up spot on Radio Live.
That's
even if he's there
all week.
That's brilliant. So
Matt, read an email out.
Oh, okay.
You look surprised. It's if
See,
the end
we,
of
we
an
do
email.
This thing where we go anti-clockwise.
You're finished. Ashish Laroa says,
Hashish.
In the USA, what you call pegs are clothes pins.
Yeah.
That's a combination of clothes and pin. It's not some sort of weird pun based on tumble dryers and clothes and spins.
But that's because they can't talk English, isn't it?
I wouldn't like to say.
Did anyone think it was clothes spin, by the way?
No.
No. No.
That's his joke.
Surely that would be cloth spin.
Cloth.
Touching.
No, cloth is a word.
Oh, no.
As in clothe him
in
gold.
For a kebab the other night and touched cloth. I went out for a kebab the other night and touched clothe.
Well,
that doesn't work that way.
It's because they're different words. Cloth and clothe are different
loads
words.
Of people are
One's
saying,
a verb.
Loads of Americans are saying, what the fuck does touch cloth mean?
It's a bit like the turtle's head.
Touch cloth is the partial...
No.
It's when you're smoking an anal cigar after you've...
It's where the turtle pokes his head out, yes.
When you fart and it's not... air.
And you follow through.
You smoke an ass biscuit.
Moving on. Oh, it's my go. Bam Bam writes in say, I don't think Jono got anywhere near enough of assuring for his firmly ignorant belief that Africa and Asia are countries and not continents.
Well, I did my best to give a shoe in, but...
So I thought I'd write just put the boot in. Like that.
Yay.
Do more of that.
Yeah, we fucking love that, don't we?
Africa has so many problems right now, political and socioeconomic, from tin pot dictators to rival tribes and gangs, to famine and natural disasters, to the HIV epidemic. And Jono doesn't even fucking know where it is. Nice one, Jono.
So what are you doing is fix it then?
So obviously me not knowing where it is means that I obviously condone all of these
you rape children,
socioeconomic problems.
You do.
Okay.
He calls you a fucking waster spastic as well, which seems a bit harsh, to be honest with you.
And this is coming from Bam Bam. We know Bam Bam.
Yep, we do.
And he's David Hasselhoff ways.
We do. He's a foul Hasselhoff impersonator.
Incidentally, Bam Bam.
And his ways should not be permitted.
Incidentally, Bam Bam, fuck you and your noise. Bite my ass.
Right.
Not something I'd look forward to doing. Anyway. Christy writes in from the not-so-great White North, which apparently is Ottawa, Canada.
Can
I listen to Lug Radio for a little under a year, has enjoyed every moment of it.
Excellent.
He has to carefully pick the spots where he listens to it.
Dirty fucker. Why can't he wait until he's finished listening?
Because quite often he finds himself laughing out loud and people looking at him a little weird.
Right, okay.
Also known as Lug Radio Syndrome.
Lug Radio Syndrome is right.
I'm glad you're all paying attention. Good stuff. He was catching up on the three most recent podcasts and he was about to write something about clothespins. A.K.A. pegs.
Cloth spins.
I'm over that everyone in friggin' America is mild to say what they are.
Until that was clarified by Kyle. He's curious to know where Kyle lives, because as far as you know, there are no laws stopping people from hanging out their undergarments.
What, people called Kyle?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other part of it, which I'm not going to read it all out, because basically it's to do with installing Jacosha on Fedora. Basically, okay. He gives some instructions about yum build dep and stuff like that. So I'm going to pass those over to Ak and maybe... Yep. Maybe we get Jacosha yum installable.
Do a new version of
it. Does say
Jacosha won't be yum installable, but the script will use yum instead of app.
He will make the script. Yeah. He will make the script at some point.
Yeah.
So yeah,
he'll make the script until Popey throws a fucking wobbler.
It doesn't. I don't know. You don't do code anymore, do you? You just write blog entries because that's the most important thing.
It's pretty straightforward. I mean, the first step is yum install yum-utils, and then the second is a bit more intense.
Well, pass it on. I'll take a look at it.
Incidentally, when was your last fucking Jacosha commit?
I wrote that tutorial.
That was a blog entry! You just shoot me about blog entries!
Moving swiftly on. Next email.
Anybody got any more emails?
I think I've got a shite one here.
Oh, good.
Oh, no, this is not too bad. This is not too bad. He says lying through his back teeth. I've got a short one and then I'll read the other one.
Have you lied through your back teeth?
Well, I don't know. I've given my back teeth in the past. Ed, possibly of the duck origin.
Ed the duck has written him.
I suspect so. He says, I started getting spam with Linux techie words to avoid the spam filters. And now I'm getting spam with chin in the subject line.
Excellent.
Which is good. We had an email from BB.
I noticed that, by the way, about the Linux words. But anyway, carry on.
I haven't noticed about the chin thing.
Not the chin thing.
He says, hi, guys. I'm a Linux/Ubuntu/open source noob. I'm absolutely fascinated by the whole concept, actually, and I've been spending the last couple of weeks, when I get the time, wandering around site after site. I do plan on installing Ubuntu on the Machine of Man, and yes... I have played around a little bit with the live CD. Nothing would make me more happy than to be able to do all of my PC work without being on the Windows leash. I do a lot of music and video work, surfing, email, some PDF work, and I also happen to be a Christian.mp3 sharing fellowship network. at www.zpoc.com. I use programs like Adobe Premiere, After Effects, Sony's Acid Music and Vegas, Propellerheads, Reason, and Media Shout for Worship Presentation.
Yeah.
So he just basically fills us in how his Anuba-Duba-Duba-Duba tells us about his various church-related antics. You used to work at the God Channel, didn't you, Matt?
I fucking did.
Tell us about your God.
That woke you up, didn't it, Matthew?
You've got me back to rights, mate.
Well, get it installed is all we'll say. That's the next step.
It's great. Did you see Christian Ubuntu thing?
Ixthux and Christian Edition.
Yeah. It's basically
Ubuntu. You see, we're not supposed to talk about this kind of thing.
Why?
I'm here from a bloke called Justin Freeman, who complains because what does he say? The increasing and overt bias of the Lug podcast to Ubuntu / Canonical to the neglect of all other distros and FOSS communities. Apparently...
Yeah, that's a sensible response, Jono. Yeah.
Apparently, we shooed Novell, and Novell get Linux into businesses, so apparently the Novell bashing in that episode was totally idiotic and uncalled for.
Uh-huh.
And we suggested that, as part of one of the predictions, who was it said Novell would drop the OpenSUSE project?
No one said that. What I said was that some distros become less relevant.
Mm.
Right, okay.
But that's obviously interpreted as Novell are going to drop OpenSUSE.
And he says, this is plain crazy, and I really question the basis for making this statement at all. So not only does he not believe it's going to happen, which is fine, but you're not allowed to predict or believe that it's going to happen either, which seems a little bit unreasonable, but there you go.
I'm sorry, I won't make predictions again.
So, we have to not mention Ubuntu or Canonical for at least two episodes.
Okay.
We have to explore and promote the diversity that is free and open source software and Linux.
Can I say two things?
I agree
and
with that.
We shouldn't promote FUD unless it's against Microsoft.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Okay. Hang on a fucking second.
Hang on, but no, leaving
we
that...
We shouldn't predict... What?
Leaving that aside for the moment, one of the reasons that we talk about Ubuntu a lot is that most of us use it.
Yeah.
So I don't have any, personally, I don't have any direct experience of OpenSUSE and what it's like, because I don't use OpenSUSE, I use Ubuntu.
Likewise.
OpenSUSE's alright, actually.
It's a very good distro.
Aid uses Fedora and does his level best to talk about it whenever he can.
I use both.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, OpenSUSE
people...
I
like to try and be unbiased.
If you like OpenSUSE and think we should be talking about things that OpenSUSE are doing that other people are not... Do write in and tell us about them. Because we don't know.
We've interviewed people from Arpath. We've interviewed the guy from Symphony.
That was Rapath, wasn't it?
Oh, Rapath. We do.
And I've tried getting, like, for example, today I spent quite some time trying to get a Gentoo person on the show.
Yeah.
I thought we'd give him a lot of shit. We should get someone on.
He's going to hash rices.
And
there it is.
And there was no one there who was interested. I spent quite some time trying to encourage these people to
just
come on.
You know how I promised to try and install Gentoo? I actually got really, really far. I have actually been trying to install Gentoo.
You compiled the shell?
No, they've actually got quite a good document on how to do it. And
okay.
It's not that difficult, apart from the part where you actually compile a kernel.
I've
never compiled
days.
The kernel before, and there's loads of menu shit.
Hang on, I'm missing... How long have you been trying to do it?
I spent one evening in a hotel room trying to do it into a VM.
Trying to do it into a VM.
Trying to install Gentoo into a virtual machine.
You spent an evening and you couldn't do it?
Well, no.
I mean you're Aid Bradshaw, for God's sake. You're reasonably competent at this stuff.
I think the only thing I did wrong...
dad to install it.
I mean, I got right to the end, went to boot, and it just came up with a load of errors. I guess the kernel didn't compile right, because that's the only bit that was difficult
for
me.
No, okay.
The rest of it was really simple.
Did you feedback comments through the Gentoo project?
No, because I feel that I've only given it one try, and I
don't mean feedback, a comment that is a shooing. I mean going back to them and saying, I think I followed this and this went wrong.
The thing is, I've never compiled the kernel on anything, so I can't really compare it.
Okay.
I think just related to that point, a few people have kind of said in the past, not many have said, you know, you always talk about Ubuntu, you always talk about GNOME.
And we worked for Canonical.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Matt, as people know,
that
Matt
doesn't
and I,
mean you can't be unbiased.
Hang on. As people know, Matt and I work for Canonical.
We bring
it up not because we work at Canonical. We got to be clear that we don't bring anything up on Lug Radio because we've got a fucking agenda. We rave about stuff that we like.
And you raved about it before you
and
worked.
We've raved about Ubuntu since season two or whatever, since Ubuntu basically first came out. And when people think something's shit, like, for example, Axe is a good example. Axe leveled a lot of criticism towards Ubuntu recently, and Axe used to level a lot of criticism towards Mono, and now is more kind of understanding of Mono. So this fucking notion that we have an agenda and that we, you know, are pushing this agenda is bullshit.
Did he say you had an agenda? I don't remember him saying that.
No, but some people have kind of said, you know...
He says increasing and overt bias towards Ubuntu and Canonical.
That suggests an agenda. Increasing and overt bias.
I think there is an increasing bias, though.
An increasing bias.
It's biased, though, because we individually choose what we choose.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, I hope Ak and I balance it out.
The only agenda we've got right as a show is whatever we fancy at that moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And honestly, that is the truth, because Lug Radio wouldn't work if we were being paid to say anything.
Oh my goodness. Sorry, I've just read this. Here are some future episode topics.
I read this.
New features in Fedora Core 6 coming up in Core 7. Fine, we can talk about that. But then he says, how to market Linux or FOSS-based services. Check this out for a potential topic. Here's the thing you ought to read about it. www.understated.co.uk/writing/marketing/open-source. Written by my friend and yours, Matthew P. Revelle, sitting on my left.
Say hello, Matt.
Hi. That's interesting.
So the author of that article actually is one of the four large gents.
Would you be happy to speak about that on the show?
Would you be happy to talk about your own opinions on the show? Is that good?
Maybe that would be biased, because you'd be talking about your opinions rather than...
No, let's be fair to him. I'm warming to him now.
You sellout!
Hey, look, I've always been honest. I am a sellout. That's fine.
Oh, he has always been honest, and he has always been a sellout.
Harsh. Excellent.
No, but honestly, look, just a recap. I think, you know, Lug Radio wouldn't work if we were being paid to say stuff. I mean, you know, we've had opportunities to go and see people or to interview people or whatever, and we've just turned them down because they bore us to tears. We could have met one of the top brass from Microsoft the other week, and we didn't even bother replying because we knew that what would happen is we'd get a fancy lunch, have to go to London, hear a load of bullshit, and then come back and nothing would have changed. So, you know, it's not as if we're in anyone's pockets. Yes, I happen to work at Canonical. Yes, Jono does. But before that, I worked at Farso. So the most ever mentioned of them was the fact that they were going to give us a server to give away. But they didn't in the end because the guy I was dealing with, unfortunately, wasn't able to.
And look a little wider, to be honest.
No, I mean, I can see the guy's point. Speaking purely for myself,
I can see one of his points. I can't see all of them.
No, I agree. But speaking purely for myself and not for the three of you, I like talking about stuff I'm interested in, and I run Ubuntu because I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't just talk about Ubuntu all the time because I think you lot ought to use it. I talk about it because it's the thing I'm most experienced with, because it's the desktop operating system I use every day. And the reason I use it every day is because I think it's as good as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see some changes with it, and I'm, you know, in discussions with people about how we can change Ubuntu to become more freeware, but that's just me.
Okay, well, we all bias to the distro that we use, and we should probably make an effort to not be quite as biased towards it.
But I disagree. I think if you like something and you use it, you're going to naturally... It's not being biased. That's a choice.
But think of how much coverage we gave to Linspire and everything.
Yeah, exactly. None of us use it, and
we're never going to use it.
We mentioned it on, what, two shows?
No, we interviewed him, Kevin, and we had him at Lug Radio Live, and we did all sorts of to help them get the message out.
And I think part of that was because we felt that we needed to give Linspire a fair crack of the whip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we give people a shoo-in and then we let them have their reply.
Yeah. So, just to clarify things, you know, we don't have an agenda, we must be talking about Ubuntu. We talk about things that we think are interesting, and today it's Ubuntu for many of us, next year it might be something else, so...
And I'll happily look at other subjects if you want to suggest them.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, thanks for suggesting some future shows, because that's always something that we're interested in. Send us the suggestions.
Absolutely.
Just do.
I mean, if there's other stuff you'd like to see, we've got a forum at forums.lugradio.org called Ideas for the Show.
Yeah.
And people drop
things
in
there.
That'd
be really helpful, actually.
One of the things that people said they'd like to see is an interview with the Nouveau guys. And interview with the Nouveau guys, there it was.
Just to finish up, something we need to specify is that SkyCon is an event that's going on in Ireland, and the Lug Radio team have been invited. We will be there.
We will be there.
We'll not mention it because we're getting paid.
We're gonna be. Some of us are doing talks. You know, ones of us who are not fucking lazy. El Baldaroon.
Bald avoids a talk, even though he's probably the most qualified among us to speak on his special subject.
I'm not qualified to speak about open source.
You're qualified to speak about.
It's not an open source conference.
Okay.
Computer conference. Talk about VoIP.
Well, first of all, no.
You know, Fifth Bird the Clown's going to be.
Secondly,
there.
I don't even
get to be asked.
I don't even get out of bed for less than £5,000 to talk.
That's not true at all. I didn't even find out till today that I was supposed to be doing a talk.
Right. But yes.
So we
ought to say thank you to the SkyCon team for inviting us. We'll say this again when we record it.
Laura Codflaps, what's a Willy or something? What's her name?
www.skycon.ie.
Is it really SkyCon.ie? I thought it was SkyCon.sky.
Skynet.io.
It is. It's basically what's happened is the computers have taken over, and then Skynet. They build these robots, and then
they're going to send a sole lone warrior into
that. Yeah,
so what's the actual URL then?
Skycon.skynet.ie.
Right, thank you.
Hang on, I'm baffled now.
Terminator.
Oh, whatever. Oh, that was good for
now. We're going to be going over there. We're going to be going over there on Thursday and coming back on the Sunday. There's going to be lots of talks.
Come and have a drink with us if you're in Ireland.
Yeah. If you're in Ireland, come and see us.
More specifically, if you're in Limerick,
Stab City,
or if you live on the mainland, perhaps you want to fly over.
Don't call it the mainland. We'll get burned in effigy when we get off the plane.
Slash me disassociates myself.
Teaching aid earlier on.
I mean, you know, people come from all over the place. Come to Lug Radio Live. So come from all over Ireland. Come to SkyCon.
Yeah, buy you beer.
And it's
buy me beer.
It's €40 to get in. That's 3 days worth of crack. Hey, and. And also you can have some Barry's tea and take
I tell
crisps.
You what, it's another sensible country using the euro. When are we going to start using the euro?
Hopefully soon.
You can buy 3 days worth of crack for €40.
What?
Yeah. I bet you can in Australia. Fucking hell, everything's cheap over there.
Yeah, it's because the exchange
rate. It's made out of kangaroos.
It's not made out of kangaroos.
That'll explain why it's so expensive everywhere else.
So anyway,
how do you fit one of them in the crank pipe?
Grind
it up small.
Let's go.
I'm enjoying myself the first time on the show.
Well, it's because we've only just woken you up, Grandad. Matt's like a Grandad. He sits there in a corner dozing. occasionally wakes up, complains about the war, and goes back to sleep. I have a fucking story about New Year.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Are you going to share it with
everyone? Having a good time.
Tell us a story. Was it about a film you
watched? I want to carry on. Aunt Jemima does Dallas.
Susan and I were going to meet up with Ack and his lady wife, Derek, to go out for New Year.
I wasn't going to be Sam, thank you.
Also a man's name note.
Short for Samantha.
Right, we decided...
Did she do the little thing with her nose?
That's who she was named after.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking idiot.
Anyway, tell us your story, John.
Her dad
was called
Tabitha, but her mum wouldn't let him.
But yeah, we decided we were going to go out and have a laugh at New Year. And of course, do you want to spend New Year having a good time? So we decided to go...
Why
don't
you get a fucking kicking about the trousers?
Well, yeah. We decided to go to...
I'll defend you.
We decided to go to the Rock Cafe in Stourbridge, right? And... Susan, I pulled the short straw, so I was driving that night. I drove over with Susan to their house, picked them up, they got into the car, right?
Hang on, it's a 5-minute walk from his house.
Yeah, but I'm driving.
Yeah, but he was driving anyway.
There's no parking at Stuart's house anyway.
Okay.
And this is Stourbridge, you're probably going to get stabbed by a farmer carrying a pig or something. So, anyway, we decided...
Yeah, because you live in Wolverhampton, home of the safety.
Yeah, Stourbridge is so much better, isn't it?
Yes.
Hang on. Beard. So we go and pick them up. We go to the Rock Cafe, I pull up, right? And we're just walking through, and the band are kind of... We were seeing this rock band there, and they were kind of emptying some stuff into a van. And we walked through, and as we're walking up there, my fucking trousers exploded.
Into flames.
My trousers, literally, the belt, the zip, the whole lot, just fell open.
Too much food.
Dead bodies were starting to fall out of windows, right? And I was kind of stood there thinking, what the fuck's going on? And his lady wife decides to say, oh, I can probably fix it. Come grabbing hold of me, dick.
So I found all this highly amusing in the fucking car park, by the way.
So yeah, so I said, I'm going to have to go back to your house and get some safety pins or something. So right. I went back to the house.
Safety trousers.
And what about safe mode trousers? My trousers need to go into safe mode. So safe mode in each corner of my trousers.
Hold down shift when you put them on.
So we went back to his house. She gave me some safety pins, right?
And it wasn't enough to hold up your mighty girth.
And I couldn't. It was difficult putting the safety pin things in. And as many people will know, I like to dance, okay? And I didn't want to have dramatic penile surgery with these safety pins. So I came out and I said, look, dude, I'm going to have to wear some of your trousers. So he went upstairs and got me some of his fucking trousers. These white slacks. Okay.
Jesus.
And I pulled them on, right? And they were like clown trousers. So I'm expecting someone to pour some like custard into these trousers.
I want to point out at this point, you would have rather gone just in your fucking pants.
The thing is, Jono, you're taking a piss about how big your trousers were, but you're so big you burst out of your trousers.
Thank you.
My petite trousers, though. Matt, you know those adverts? You know those adverts for Weight Watchers where you've got a bloke stuck
Barry Bethel
in a massive pair of trousers?
Yeah,
look how much weight I lost. So I put these trousers on, and they were the funniest thing, like, they looked really cool because we're quite baggy. Right. I mean, they weren't massive. I mean, I'm exaggerating just a tiny bit. But I put these...
Thank you.
I put these this fucking tent of trousers on, okay? And we went to the Rock Cafe, and they were like, the crotch hung down like my knees.
Right.
One of the first songs that came on, Baggy Trousers by Magnus. Well, please. So, yeah, so I never expected...
So, Ack helped you out by lending you some of his trousers, and all you can do is ridicule him.
Yeah, but that's pretty much the long and the short of it.
Good job.
It was... I never expected to see the 2007 in Ack's trousers.
You wanted the
I feel
reverse,
like our Relationship has maybe progressed.
Yeah, I mean, I shall remember this next time I try and load. So, I mean, imagine next time we're going home from Guadec and you realise you've left all your stuff there and haven't got enough money to get a thing, get a fucking train. So I give you the money. Next time, fucking stay in Spain.
Was this where you left your...
I left my fucking...
You left your laptop at the station,
all of my belongings on the...
And he went, oh no, I haven't got any money.
There was that brilliant moment where we were all on the train. And you went... Where's my bag? And we all looked out the window.
There it was,
as the train started to move,
and there it was on the platform.
Shit, so
as
did
we
you
pulled
lose
that villain over.
No, I left it on the thing. It was literally as Aid said. As I noticed, the train started moving off, and my bag was going into the distance.
So is that it then? It's gone.
And
no. So I lent him some money.
He got off at the next station, stole all of my money, got on a fucking train, and then got a cab all the way to the airport on my dime, and still hasn't paid me back for it.
This crazy
Is that why it took you 70 hours to get home?
I don't owe you that money. I owe you 500 quid for bite money.
Yes, you do. That's quite right.
But this mad Spanish woman decided that she was going to take me under her wing and was running around screaming random Spanish things. And pointing, and
they're great, aren't they?
They're mad Spanish women. You can't knock them. I tried to buy her a drink to go out for dinner.
Did she have a paella under her arm?
I think it's time we wrap the show up.
Do you think?
Thank you very much. Goodbye, everybody.
It's been a good show. Bye-bye.
Bye.